My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, fast to freedom. Start tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for November 6th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and set up a one-time or recurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears. Joined alongside, as always, your other host, Case Lowe. And somehow, Case, we kind of tripped into a November schedule that is completely front-loaded, and we have a whole lot to talk about with Gate of Destiny, King of Gate kickoff, Oriyaru Produce, Naruki Doi's 25th anniversary show he's putting on this week. But most importantly, how are you holding up, buddy?
I'm okay. I'm good. Well, I think this is a week where we're going to kind of want to jump right into it. It is a front-loaded November schedule, which means, for those wondering, we have not forgotten about those days, but that is something that will come later in this month. I was thinking about sharing a Darius Rucker anecdote that I had from earlier this week, as I was in the presence of the front man from Hootie and the Blowfish. But we're going to skip that. I think there's enough big Dragon Gate stuff and enough to talk about. And also, normally I eat dinner before we record this podcast, and I did not eat dinner before. So I think we're going to jump right into it, if that's okay with you, Mike. I know you have broken bones. Do you want to briefly talk about your ailments before we talk about what I thought was a very, very fun weekend in wrestling?
All everyone has to know is that my wife is now seriously considering if I need to be put in a bubble because I managed to break two of my toes, stubbing my toe in the garage. Yeah, it's infuriating, but the plus side is let me catch up on everything wrestling TV wise, just keeping off my foot for a couple of days. And before I hit record, I had to regale Case in what it is by far the worst television show that exists right now. All's Fair on Hulu, starring Kim Kardashian. But no, let's get right into it, Case. Gate of Destiny weekend is in the books. Two nights in Osaka, Edeon 2. I think before we like dive into it ourselves, into the shows themselves, I think like kind of just taking the macro view of kind of in a way, I felt like that the company essentially moved Champion Gate over to November. And at least for me, I felt like it really paid off with, at least towards the business end, with four solid to excellent title matches and at least interesting one or two interesting thing on the undercard. So what was your big takeaway from the weekend in Osaka?
I guess I still, as I look at these cards, I don't understand why the undercards were quite as barren as they were. You could point to Yamato and Yoshioka not being on the first night of shows as somewhat of an explanation. Was Dio on the show? Was Dio on the first set of shows? No, he was August.
No, they were in Gifu. They're in Gifu for
Hiroshi Tanahashi. I couldn't remember if Dio was on that show or not. So, you know, you're losing three guys there. It's a weekend that I think the tenor of this podcast, and I think the overall temperature and the Dragon Gate channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord, I think would have been drastically different had the three matches on each show, night one and night two, had the three matches that really mattered not delivered to the level that they did, because it was a rare time in 2025 where the roster felt thin and things did not feel super hot. And then each show, the Brave Gate match the first night, Ishimori versus Sio the second night, kicked off what turned into, for both shows, about 90 minutes of world-class wrestling, which always goes to show that people remember what they saw last, and we left this weekend with two stellar main events and a lot of other really enjoyable stuff. But it was a strange weekend. You know, we both have written reviews up at voicesofwrestling.com, and I like to hit a certain length with those reviews. I've been doing them long enough to where I kind of know, as the show's going on, what exactly I'm going to say, how I'm going to write about this show. And with all of the thoughts that I have on this product, I tend to hit X number of words or X number of pages every time out. And for a big show like Gate of Destiny, those reviews are normally even a little bit longer. And I just had nothing to say on the undercard for night one. It was not bad. It was entirely inoffensive, but it was something that had no substance to be found whatsoever, which I thought was so interesting. But again, by the time we got to the stuff that mattered, which again is the stuff that matters, a really fun weekend of shows.
Yeah, I feel like with the exception of, I can't bury the lead, Case, I am fully on board Shiro Shinbashi at this point. If it wasn't for like his appearances on these undercards, there just really isn't a whole lot of depth to it. But I bring up that Champion Gate comparison about how Dragon Gate would normally have this style of doubleheader at the end of February, beginning of March, and they've broken away from it being Champion Gate branding over the last few years. This year, they kicked off Rey de Parejas on one of the shows, and then last year, they did a Gate of Nostalgia instead of a Champion Gate kind of show. And I didn't go fully into all of my past notes, but looking over these double headers, I feel like that this is kind of a trend of these shows that when they have four title matches in two nights, actually five title matches, I just put over Jiro Shinbashi. I should recognize that he is the Open the Ware Gate champion. But over like these shows, like I don't remember outside of moving like a Brave Gate match to the opener, these undercards ever really being knocking them dead as it relates to as distinct shows by themselves. But I always walk away from Champion Gate weekend going, well, hot damn, maybe the undercards weren't that great, but we have four title matches that I felt like we came away from. And even on that opening night, I felt like that the four-way six-man tag was a great deal of fun there. But yeah, man, when I was writing my review for the second night, you can tell basically with kind of how these matches were that sometimes there really is only a paragraph to be said when Gajah Dokuro gets disqualified in 3 minutes because Kota Minoura snapped slash decided he was done working for the weekend. You know, like, there's only so much we can do with that.
Only so much. And I was enjoying that match for the 3 minutes that it lasted. Let's start here. We've got a bunch of title matches to talk about, you know, Brave Gate, Dream Gate match on night one. And then I want to talk specifically about one thing in the four-way 12-man tag on night one. And then Ishimori Hyo, Triangle Gate match, Twin Gate match on night two. But let's go chronologically here. Let's talk Jiro Shimbashi. This is something that you're a little bit more passionate about than I am. But even I will come out and say that I was quite entertained by the rookie's antics on these two shows. I have not seen what he did in Korakuen yet. I only watched the King of Gate.
It was great.
That's good to hear. I only watched the King of Gate Korakuen matches. I'll have that written review up. I'm shooting for Monday of this upcoming week. If you're listening to this on Friday, then I'm shooting for Monday for that review. But I've only seen the tournament matches so far. But Jiro Shimbashi, Mike, I'm gonna hand it over to you to explain what all that was and then your thoughts on it.
All right. So as I kind of speculated slash was able to put the shadow to the trainee, Jiro Shimbashi is the former nicknamed Kamei's dad. I'm blanking on his first name. His last name is Sugiera, which is part of the little joke that Jay was able to kind of fill in on today's showcase. Apparently, he represents the Sugiera training systems. So they're making a little bit of a joke on his last name. And Jay also said that he's called Shimbashi. Wait, I work in Shimbashi. So maybe there's a little bit of riffing happening with this thing. But the former Kamei's dad is essentially playing a wrestler that is based off of the Japanese stereotype of a salaryman. And a salaryman is the idea of the Japanese workforce, especially during the post-war miracle into the 80s before the pop of the bubble and the lost decades, was basically the idea that this guy would go off to work and he would go at 7 a.m. He would leave work at like 7 p.m., immediately go drinking with his coworkers, and all his life was basically consumed with business things. And Jiro Shimbashi is dressed up in an ill-fitting suit. He comes out handing out business cards because that is a very important thing in Japanese business culture. When you introduce yourself, guys, you have the business card to hand out, and it's done in a certain kind of way. And it's just riffing kind of on the stereotypes of a salaryman. Like, he takes phone calls during the match, which pisses off Kunishio Kamen and Don Fuji over Gate of Destiny, pissed off Misaki Mochizuki. It works great.
And just to note here briefly, you know, my patience for any form of comedy wrestling at this point is lower than it was 5 years ago, certainly lower than it was 10 years ago. In Dragon Gate, it has its place. It's always had its place. I'm far more tolerant of it here than in other promotions, especially when it's on the undercard, and especially when it's not Takashi Yoshida related. I tend to enjoy things a lot more when he's not doing the comedy stuff. I say all this when it was confirmed that it was Shimbashi debuting, I was not annoyed, but I was a little disappointed, because anybody that's heard any episode of this show knows how much I enjoy a Dragon Gate debut match, a new rookie, somebody to get excited about, one of my favorite things in wrestling. And when it was like, oh, he's doing comedy, I was thinking, all right, well, this isn't really what I want. Maybe it's good for him, but I'm not going to get too excited about this. And then he did the Tilt-A-Whirl head scissors while taking a phone call. And I regret to inform you that he got me at that point. And I was like, all
right, he's good.
This is something I have not seen before. This is something good. I'm into this. Sorry to cut you off. Please continue.
No, yeah, but basically he does a whole bunch of spots that are based off comedy thing. He comes out with an umbrella and does a golf swing because that's where he likes to take all of his important clients. That's what the phone calls are apparently about, is setting up golf outings. And he uses the umbrella to do the old Soccer Chikawa, Jinsei Shinzaki, rope walk bit. And yeah, and the big stunt about Shimbashi is, When Kamei's dad was doing future matches, he was wearing a rash guard. And that was one of the things you kind of went like, huh, okay, that's different. And it so turns out that Shinbashi has like a very hairy chest as a young man, and they use that as an effective bit that his big finish. So it seems at this point is he gets pissed off, he rips off his suit and he tosses his dress shirt and goes for a schoolboy, and that's kind of it. For Sugera, like the trainee, I think it was pretty clear case that this guy, a lot like Koki Oshima, were guys that just aren't progressing as like full-fledged, you know, stereotypical Dragon Gate wrestler. So you have to find the lane with these guys. With Oshima, he might end up being masked because of things that we've heard and seen with him. But with Shinbashi, this seems like a lane and a kind of comedy gimmick, at least to me, that I feel like there's a lot of meat on the bone here. There's a lot of different things that he can do. It's clear that the guy has a level of physical wrestling ability that he's able to weave it in here. I guess really like the thing to kind of see is what's going to happen after you do like the first big loop of going through. Like, he's already faced Fuji. He faced Mochizuki. He'll probably face Yamato sometime soon. It's going to be like, how does he kind of slot himself into the rest of the roster? Because if you even think about like the comedy wrestlers of Dragon System history, you think about how Sakura Chikawa, even though he was like veteran gun and stuff like that, it was very pick and choose with Sakura at certain points. And even with Yosuke Santa Maria, when they were playing the Exotico gimmick as a kind of comedy act kind of thing, it still worked within the greater millennials. So for me, that's kind of what I'm waiting to see. I think there's a lot there with this, or it could be something that for a guy who was struggling in the trainee session, this gives him a lease at life, or at least on this roster, that at least to me, I don't know if it would have necessarily been there. And for all the kids who come through and end up being like a Kazuma Asumi or a Cannon and people like that, I like the fact that, you know, maybe you're able to find a way to make a guy who might not fit perfectly, you find his lane. And I think that's a possibility with Shinbashi. And I think that that's good, at least.
A lot of good points there. A few things I want to hit on, but I think that's really excellent analysis of his debut. You're right in the sense that I think this is good that they were able to fill a lane there. He's somebody that we've been aware of for so long that this now I'm fully of the belief that this was the option and that there was, you know, he's,
when he was wearing the rash guard, they were hiding his chest for a reason. And it's obviously now they thought it would have been a good comedy spot.
And now we're at a point where I think this is something where maybe there's unforeseen growth here and he turns into a Brave Gate level wrestler at some point in his career. But when we're aware of a green boy for as long as we were with him and nothing is happening and people are debuting at a rate that is surpassing him, something is clearly up. And I do like the fact that they are able to find a position for him on the roster. What I'm curious about, given where we are in the calendar year, is I wonder if he's going to be on that Hokkaido tour and if it's going to be like a Ryo Fuda situation where he's on that tour because one person requested a meet and greet with him and so he has to go on the tour.
I mean, he's getting over, like, both Osaka and Tokyo love the act a lot.
Yes, yeah, so that's what I'm pretty sure he's going to be on that tour. I just think that's something to note as we move throughout November and early December. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, when this settles. You're exactly right. You know, there's the first loop and he's going to do all the singles matches and then he'll do probably 6 months of unaffiliated Cork and Hall 8-man tag matches. And we'll see him in that position a lot. The way the roster is laid out now, he's not a fit in Psypatra. He's not a fit of Natural Vibes, although I do think the salary man doing the Natural Vibes dance, if Vibes were ever to heat up again, that would be completely and utterly fascinating. It's not the D-Courage vibe. It's not the Paradox vibe. I mean, is
evil
it the
businessman?
Evil businessman. Well, that's evil businessman is a very funny concept that I would love for them to explore at some point, but down the road, you know, I guess Love and Peace is the most natural of fits there, but I don't think Love and Peace is a natural fit with that character, with the way that he's been presented, at least through the two matches that I've seen. So I'm curious to see how that shakes out, because I do think that that's a character that they can mold into a Maria-like presence with, you know, Maria and Millennials and then Maria and Tribe Vanguard, you know, up through her injuries that, you know, really, really slowed her career. I mean, Maria was such an active and at times very important part of the roster. Only time will tell if Shimbashi ever reaches those heights that Maria did. What I think is going to be really interesting is that roster integration and whether or not they're able to figure that out with this character.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of the situation where it's like, okay, like Stalker, essentially, after they started doing all the team veterans, he was just unaffiliated, showing up every once in a while. And that probably portended the like the start of his decline, and especially the style, given his size, that he was able to do. Well, one would think, at least with this 26 years later on a roster that's a lot more full, that he's that Shinbashi, like, he wrestles a really physical style for like his size, that maybe like as it like fits up there, and maybe as time goes on, we'll see like what aspects kind of trade with it. But that was, at least to me, one of the big highlights of the undercard, because I know you had something you want to touch on with the night one of Gate of Destiny, a four-way six-man tag, before we moved on to the stuff on the undercard on night two.
I said last week that I think the move for Cypatra going forward is that this unit, despite their shades of gray and the characters with the history that they have, I do feel like this should be the unit that is representing Dragon Gate as much as humanly possible. And I do feel like they should really, really push forward with this unit as a chaotic good, but clearly a babyface unit, leaning into the likability of Shun, leaning into the likability of Himare, and leaning in to whatever this Gianni Valletta babyface push is, which, to jump ahead to night two quickly, let me tell you, it works. It's fantastic. I love it.
He's amazing. I have a comp that I'm going to save for when we talk about him in that match. But yeah, continue.
The energy in that four-way trios match, it was, you know, it was a good match, but it was a pretty pedestrian affair for a Dragon Gate style match of that style. And then Cypatra came in and did their offense. And this was Shun, this was Himare, and this was El Cielo. And I don't remember a lot of matches in history, in Dragon Gate history, where the energy has shifted so dramatically by one unit coming into the ring the way that they did. And the offensive sequences they put forth in this match were eye-opening and jaw-dropping to me. And I am ready for this unit to take over the world. I mean, I really, really think, and this is a 20-year battle, because I don't think the Triangle Gate belts have been handled correctly since 2005, but I really, really think that with these guys as Triangle Gate champions, they should be headlining shows. This should be a long run. It should keep Shun away from the Dreamgate scene. It should keep Himare away from perhaps overstepping either in the Bravegate scene or, you know, leveling up into a Dreamgate challenge. These guys collectively are stars. You know it when you see it. And as a unit, this is a unit of stars.
Yeah. And I think like the big takeaway coming out of at least these three sets of shows is really Cypatra is off to the races. And it's interesting now that, like, within that match, and then now, not to bury the lead, Cypatra being Triangle Gate champions, they're going to be forced to do stuff outside the Shun versus Gaja Dokuro kind of feud that we've been set up with. And with that, it does kind of feel like we're getting to a point with like both Shun's popularity and Himare's that like positions and roles of the company, like, that D Courage is held. And I feel funny saying that, given it's very, at least to me, clear what they want us to believe with Yuki Oshioka going forward. It feels like that coming out of these, like, these shows, that Cypatra felt as much of the main characters of the promotion as D Courage has over the last 3 years.
Yeah, very much so. Absolutely.
So let's talk about these two title matches that we had on night one. It was the Open the Bravegate title with Ryoya Tanaka defending against his mentor, Billy King Kid, as well as Madoka Kakuta defending against Susumu Yokosuka. Having to slide for the title matches here, given D Courage and Yamato being in Gifu for their show, what I really came away, especially with the Bravegate match. I felt like that one, maybe for me, ended up being the match of the night with it. But it was kind of fascinating, like the way that they've kind of set up these two matches, at least to me, and how they ended up playing out throughout the night.
Well, the Bravegate match was just... It was just a love letter to a style of wrestling and a look of wrestling that I don't really feel exists anymore. I mean, it felt like the perfect bridge gap between Osaka Pro, the best of Osaka Pro, and current day Dragon Gate. I loved the look of the match. I don't understand why more people aren't. This is in all sincerity. I don't understand why more people aren't wearing gear like Billy Kincaid. I don't understand why more people aren't masked up. I don't understand where the big robes have gone. And that style of Lucha Wrestling grappling with a hot Dragon Gate finishing stretch was just, to me, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and someone like Billy Kincaid, who we've seen in and out of the promotion, really around like the Osaka Pro feud, but always has kind of stuck out whenever he faced off against Dragon Gate wrestlers. It kind of makes like It makes perfect sense in retrospect, Case, that if you are a kid in Osaka that, you know, blue collar upbringing, saving up money to go to like the Dragon Gate gym, like, yeah, no, go study under Billy Kincaid. And, you know, then eventually you're going to have a rivalry with Billy Kincaid and it's going to come off like awesome. And I, at least for me, the sheer like level of like playing off the student teacher relationship and then starting to throw bombs and just like trying to destroy each other like that avalanche air raid crash. And it just felt like that for like this building and for like this time, this was like the exact kind of match for Oya Tanaka that he kind of needed. And in a way, he has now crossed 6 title defenses. He's halfway to PAC. And it felt like that this, like from like his new gear to his entrance to just the way he's kind of composed himself over this Bravegate title run, this felt like that more so than maybe other matches in his reign. This felt like a level up to like a new stage of Oya Tanaka going forward. And especially, you know, going into King of Gate season, he feels like as much of like the kingpin of the Bravegate division than Daya and Hyo did, but in years previous. And it's fascinating because I feel like it's almost like a second reign kind of starting at this point with him when he's already has 6 title defenses.
It's the most complete Bravegate run we've had in a really long time, where I think he is advantageous for the belt. I think the belt is advantageous for him. I think every match has been really unique and almost every match has been really, really good. We also now have the perfect Stardust press. We have the one that should be used in video packages from now until the end of time. Forget the UT botch at Kobe World. We don't need that anymore. They shot it perfectly. He hit it perfectly. I have no notes on that. But the Tanaka reign is now we're at a point where it's like, all right, you know, if the next defense is 4+ stars, then I'm going to really start looking at what Doi's done with the belt and what Yoshino's done with the belt and what Ricochet's done with the belt and what Dragon Kid's done with the belt. And we're going to start really having to analyze the Tanaka Bravegate run in a historical context. And I know Alan Forrell said it in the Discord, and I'm very glad that he did. This is the first of 2 times I'm going to bring up the SFM 50 tonight. But, man, I've watched a lot of wrestling this year. Not a long list of people better than Ryoya Tanaka. I mean, this is a guy who I felt very comfortable having him in my SFM 50. You know, as the year has gone on, I've just known he's one of the 50 best wrestlers in the world. But to have the title matches he's had and to have them be really, really unique title matches at that, I'm telling you, this is a guy who's now flirting with a top 25 position.
Yeah, it's going to take not very many hands and toes for me to count out wrestlers before I come up to Ryo Tanaka as best in 2025. That's for sure. And I mean, now he's fully into King of Gate season. So you get those title matches out of the way because he's probably not going to have one through the month of November and maybe one more to close out the year. And it's like, we're at a point with Tanaka that I truly feel like over the next 6 to 12 months, like whatever happens to the rest of this Bravegate run, you could already check it off unless something abysmal and disastrous happens when he drops it. Like, it's an unqualified success at this point. But now we're approaching that point with him that it took a while for both Daya and Hyo to kind of get to where they felt like that now for Daya and Hyo, you can almost put the title, the division behind them, and now they're now fully kind of past that kind of title at this point. And
well, Tanaka, I mean, Hyo's winning King of Gate, so I think it's fully past him at this point.
But like, after this run, we're going to have that conversation with Tanaka in 6 to 12 months.
Oh, well, I watched Tanaka versus Homari today thinking this is a future Kobe World main event. I mean, this will be the only Tanaka Brave Gate run that isn't at least characterized by, hey, can you believe Tanaka's going back to the Brave Gate belt? Because he's all right. I mean, that's why it's so beneficial for the title, is that we're now watching a guy that I don't want to say is wrestling above what the legacy of the Brave Gate belt is, but we're watching a guy who is clearly ready for more. He's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and it's going to be real. He's going to be the one of the real characters of Dragon Gate to watch in 2026, just to see where it kind of goes from here.
You know, I when we talk about Kame, I'm going to go through some of his title matches just to show off the pedigree and how impressive it is. But Tanaka's an interesting one where he debuted with hype because people like you and I watched the This Is Dragon Gate documentary that came out in the fall of 2022, and it highlights Tanaka passing his dojo exam. And so we knew by the time that he debuted in May of 2023 that it was somebody that we were going to have eyes on. And there was a lot of internal buzz about Tanaka debuting, which was very, very exciting. And he debuted against Yamato in Osaka and had a very good debut match, and spent, you know, the first 5 months of his career just being one of those patented good Dragon Gate rookie wrestlers. We knew he was good. We knew he was going to be very good. And in November of 2023, when he got put in D Courage, you know, it's the one time that there was the Atomico's D Courage match because Yoshioka got hurt right after this. But he stepped up to the plate in that first match against Natural Vibes as a member of D Courage and completely knocked it out of the park. And it was when it was time for him to take another step up because of Yoshioka's absence, he was there passing with flying colors. And as he's gone on to have this singles run representing D Courage, There's no hiccup. There's no adjustment period. What impresses me about Ryoya Tanaka is just how flawlessly he's able to transition from one phase of his career to the next. And although it's only been 18 months, it's been a jam-packed 18 months in which he's made almost no mistakes. There's almost no duds. What he's been able to do has been absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, it's something where when you kind of design a Dragon Gate wrestler, we've kind of known it from the start that he is kind of that style of wrestler that we want to keep that eye on, and that he could be that kind of figure. And lo and behold, he has just been the prototype of what you wanted in every single way and hasn't taken a single step wrong throughout his short career so far. Any other thoughts about the Brave Gate before we move on to the main event, the Open the Dream Gate title from night one?
You had referenced it earlier, but I just want to throw out the, I don't have the exact name of what the move was called, but the air raid crash that Billy Kincaid kept on going back to, I thought looked absolutely devastating. The one on the apron, the one from the middle rope, and then that led into just such an incredible sequence where there was that great Billy Kincaid backslide that nearly beat Tanaka. I bit at that near fall because I did not know the result of any of these matches going into them, and I was so impressed by that. And then, again, for Tanaka to finish off the match the way that he did, you know, buzzsaw kick, cross saber, and then the perfect Stardust pressed, I was so impressed by this. 4.25 stars. Tanaka continues to be a highlight of this company. And a credit to Billy Kincaid for pushing himself to the limit that he did and for succeeding, you know, for showing up in a big spot and delivering. I thought that was really, really exciting.
Two quick things before we move on. Apparently, the air raid crash is called the Komori Suri Otoshi. And I did not realize this until I got into one of my research holes here, Case. But Billy Kincaid and the University of, or the St. Louis University Billikens, there is a link between that mascot and Billy King Kid, the character.
Oh, interesting.
So the city of Osaka kind of adopted the Billiken as a mythical thing after the Billiken was kind of created as like this mascot kind of thing. And it relates into like the Osakan like god of good luck and fortune. Basically, there's like a Billiken statue in a shrine in Osaka. And that's what Super Delphin was referring to when he gave him that gimmick.
I love that.
But the Dreamgate title match, Madoka Kakuta making his second defense of the Dreamgate title in this reign against old man Susumu Yokosuka, who, even though he tried to tap into all the different powers of various Paradox members, going for first flashes, Galarea's, Bibles, Bakatari sliding kicks, what have you, that was not enough. Madoka Kakuta is operating on a different level of viciousness and brutality. He takes off his head with a discus lariat, and Kakuta walks into King of Gate as the Dream Gate champion. And the Susumu, the hope for Susumu's one last ride goes on another day, but it's that day was not in Osaka on the 2nd.
I wrote about this in the written review that, you know, I sort of knew what this match was going to look like ahead of time. It was going to be the trademarked Susumu arm match. I knew at some point they were going to roll to the floor. He was going to go for a Jumbo Nokashi. Kakuta was going to duck. He was going to lariat the pole. And from there, we would have whatever was going to unfold. And maybe it was just that level of jadedness going into it. I'm not sure what it was, but I found that the first, I don't want to say half, but the first quarter of this match did not grab me. And I thought maybe Father Time had finally come for Susumu Yokosuka, to where 3.5 years ago, he had one of the best Dreamgate matches ever against Kai. A year and a half ago, he had a really, really enjoyable and much needed Dreamgate match with Luis Monte. But we haven't seen him in a ton of high-profile spots since, and with how polarizing this Kakuta reign has been, I just wasn't sure we were going to get to a point in this match where I was fully invested in it and really enjoying the work. And right before he went through that series of Paradox moves, like you said, you know, which is a spot that they can, you know, use and use and use until the end of time. I'm always going to pop for it. I love that spot so much. Whenever anybody does that with a unit or with their generation, I always think it's great. I'm going to cut myself off here. It's great. It's great. And it's not fucking corny. Like I saw the clips of the AJ Styles John Cena match where they were just doing other people's moves, and like they did the Sting finisher and the stroke and like all these TNA moves. It's like, who gives a fuck? That has nothing to do with John Cena and AJ Styles. It's the most overrated form of storytelling in wrestling when it's, oh, they're doing a move that I've seen before. I don't even like when Ospreay does the Styles Clash, because I think the way that he does it is weird. I think the relationship people have with that move is weird. It makes sense in the context of either Shima using all of the veterans' moves like he did in the Dreamgate match against Shingo 10 years ago. I also thought it worked really well here because it was so uncharacteristic for Susumu, and I've never seen him do, you know, the Dragon Kid move that he did, the Bakatari sliding kick, the Galarea. All of that was very fun and fresh to me. But at some point in this match, I just had to sit back and crack my knuckles and go, goddamn, Susumu Yokosuka is genuinely one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And he is a far cry from who he was 10 years ago. He's a far cry from who he was 5 years ago. He's not the same wrestler that wrestled against Kai in May of 2022. But at least one more time, he was able to prove that he still had it. I thought his performance was incredible. I thought Kakuta held his own. Very polarizing match, one I landed with at 4 stars.
Yeah, I ended up being 4 flat as well. I think Kakuta has really, over the last 6 months, really essentially since the heel turn, the way that I feel like he's now like a fully mature wrestler, in a way that the D-Courage years, even like his Open the Dreamgate run back in 2023, there were aspects about him that I feel like, not to be like disingenuous, like it was not necessarily like rookie stuff, but it was stuff that like young guy wrestling stuff. And now I feel like, especially this title match and the match he would have with Yuki Oshioka at Korakuen today, Madoka Kakuta is a grown-ass man monster who is going to put you in the dirt. And that has, at this point for him in this title run, like having him now kind of in a way mature and get to that point, I think is exceptional case, because he feels like the real big monster top of the food chain in Dragon Gate right now. And Susumu hit the notes that you'd want Susumu to hit in this match to get it across the finish line and being a success, even with it kind of having the stereotypical kind of slowness that you would have when you have like this kind of style of Dreamgate matches. Like those are just kind of, we don't have them as much anymore. Funny enough, Case, guess where we got that this week as well? We got this in Glate with Shima and Alendaman. We'll talk about that show much more, but like that was like the standard archetype for the matches. And for, if you're someone who likes that format of matches and that level of build, I think that it's a unquestioned success of a title defense for Kakuta.
I think that the Kakuta stuff is really interesting, because I know there are some people that are fully out on it. I think my tone would be a little bit more intense and a little bit more direct in a positive way had I liked the Yoshioka match more than I did. I did find the King of Gate main event today to be slightly underwhelming. I think we can officially chalk it up that maybe just Kakuta and Yoshioka don't have the chemistry that Kakuta seems to have with almost everybody else. Something I'm sitting thinking about here just now is, you know, there's that one 8-man tag from 2020 that was Kakuta, Kabune, Kame and Sora Fujikawa and Kobe Sambo Hall. And if my memory serves me correct, I got to look up this match real quick, because I believe it was Kakuta swinging for the fences with Susumu in that match, which is probably warrants a rewatch at this point. That was August of 2020. I hate that I know that given all the things I don't know in life, but August 15th, Kobe Sambo Hall. Yeah. Don Fuji, Naruki Doi, Shuji Kondo, Susumu Yokosuka versus Kabune, Kakuta, Fujikawa and Kame. And that was, you know, the second or third televised match we had from Kakuta. So I don't want to say it was his coming out party, but that was the one where I remember coming on this show with you and going like, who is this guy? Like, he's really got something different than a lot of these other rookies have had in recent years. And so fun to put that connection together just now. But I think the Kakuta reign is going very, very well. I like the way he's presented. I really like the way that he comes across in multi-mans. And the singles match style is a controversial one. It is polarizing, but with the Ben match and this match, and even by the end of the Yoshioka match, ultimately, no matter what the front half of the match is, the back half has been so exhilarating. And I do feel like he's getting the point across in the way that it's desired. So I am still very much a supporter of Kakuta, and I like the work that he's doing right now.
No, I am with you with that. It's just interesting to see it kind of go back to that kind of match format, just as an aside. The second night of Gate of Destiny had the Twin and Triangle Gate as your title matches. The one other match worth talking about, I found on the card, was the special singles match between Taiji Ishimori of New Japan Pro Wrestling and Hyo. Before that, at least, I felt like the undercard on night two, with the exception of the Don Fuji Jiro Shinbashi match, I thought it was just kind of there because everyone was there and they had to get through the match before they can go home and get ready for the week.
Oh, yeah, a whole bunch of nothing.
Yeah, but the Hyo versus Taiji Ishimori, Taiji wins in a blown lock, working in the arm throughout the match as well. Interesting kind of match. As I had this match as a written review case, so that to kind of go behind the curtain, I kind of came at a certain point where like there's so much of that history of Taiji Ishimori and the Dragon System that I feel like in 5 or 10 years ago would have been like the overwrought, like weighing things down, like that would have been the story going in of, oh, Taiji Ishimori is finally making an appearance in Dragon Gate in this kind of way, where it's not necessarily under a threat of GHC title matches. And it didn't really have that much. Like, I found myself writing kind of like, okay, here's the situation of Taiji Ishimori after the match, but I'm going, but the crowd did not really kind of view it in that sort of way whatsoever.
Well, he's been soft launched so much with the produce shows he's done and some interactions with, you know, Dragon Kid. And I think he and Kagetora were on another show together earlier this year. So it didn't have the vibe of like when Kondo came back in 2020 and the only interaction was the Mochizuki and Skywalker tag from All Japan in 2018. And then Kondo showed up for the first time in 15 years. And it was a real, you know, enemy invading the territory type thing. Ishimori, I think digitally and actuality, we've seen that whatever barriers were there have been broken down. It would have been way different had Ishimori been on the Toriumon reunion show 5 years ago. That would have felt like a colossal deal, but we've just seen little by little him integrate himself back into this universe over the years. And so by the time that he showed up here, it didn't, I gotta be honest, it didn't mean a ton to me. It was like, yeah, it's about time he does something.
Yeah, it just was like one of those things where, like, maybe it is that soft launch and the fact that New Japan has used this Toriumon X trauma as kind of a comedy bit here. But instead, what I felt like you got in this match just felt kind of just like a very good but not great kind of match that in a lot of ways I felt like that this was kind of the entrance exam for Hyo to work New Japan stuff next year. That's kind of the vibe I got from it. Did you feel any different?
Oh, yes. I think Hyo is working Super Juniors. And as I will continue to say, I think he's going to crush doing Super Juniors. I have become incredibly bullish on the idea for whatever reason, even though he's such an authentically Dragon Gate wrestler. I think Hyo's best work will come outside of this company when he gets the opportunity to. I think you and I both saw that in Vegas this year, where we weren't really sure what that was going to be like, seeing Hyo work in front of an American audience. And then we saw Hyo work in front of an American audience, and it worked out great. And I think if he's presented in a Super Juniors tournament in the same way that he's being presented now, Love and Peace character, that gear, that whole getup, I think he will do wonders in New Japan. I think he will be incredibly over. And I also think he's in ring the best he's ever been. I think Hyo's doing the best work of his career right now. You know, and it's not, it doesn't have maybe the wow factor that some of the big brain Hyo stuff did during the RED period and during the Z-Brats period. But I also think he doesn't need that now. I think he's just become a better wrestler. It doesn't have to rely on the character stuff as much. So no, you're exactly right. This was Ishimori essentially doing the final exam for Hyo to make sure that he could hang with New Japan wrestlers. And I think he absolutely can.
Yeah, no. And I think that the thing that New Japan's not prepared for is just like Hyo will become a charisma monster and then you unleash him. And then all you're going to have to do is go get whatever thing you did for Okada Rainmaker Bucks. And you're going to have to make a bunch of Hyo Bucks because this is how it works. And they're going to completely have an underground economy by the end of the best of the Super Junior Tour. That's just formed by Hyo Bucks because of how over he'll be with that crowd with that bit.
Yeah, very much so.
But the title matches on the second night, we had the Triangle Gate, Saipatra versus Gaja Dokuro, and then the Twin Gate match, Love and Peace versus D Courage. Let's talk about the Triangle Gate one first. Saipatra defeats Gaja Dokuro. Gaja Dokuro fail in their second defense. The pin happens with Johnny Valletta doing the King Kong knee drop version EX off the top rope onto Ishin to win with a monster pop. And Case, we witnessed something over WrestleMania weekend that I got to kind of expand a theory towards you about when we were going to that Corpus Christi indie show that Z-Brats was on, that we got to see kind of a local big man folk hero kind of wrestler where he's just bigger than everyone else and he has like one move that he kind of does, but he's massively over with that. That's kind of what Johnny Valletta is now in Dragon Gate. He's kind of the giant, like, Paul Bunyan like character who is a wild man who comes in to help his guys and does an incredible Manny Fernandez flying burrito running splash. And I just, in a way, like, the, I my biggest miss on this podcast was thinking that Johnny Valletta wasn't going to work. Not only did he work as a Bruiser Brody tribute heel, now he is this folk hero kind of babyface to two psychopaths, and it's awesome. I want them to have a long run with this, and I think Johnny as kind of the face of the group kind of works in a lot of ways.
I completely agree. I was very bullish on the idea of him from the beginning. I once again had slight reservations post-turn what exactly it was going to look like and whether or not he could pull off that transition. And of course, he has done nothing but exceed in his new role, exceed my expectations. I think he was absolutely phenomenal in this match. And I'm so into the dynamic of any combination of Saipatra right now, but especially these three, I think, are such a stellar combination. I was reading some tweets from somebody who was saying, oh, well, they should do Hamare and Valletta and Skywalker and Cielo and Rey de Parejas next year. And even though last week I said that I would just run back Shun and Hamare, I think that's probably the move. I would make sure that I can get Valletta in Japan in March. I would do he and Hamare in one block, and Skywalker and Cielo in the other. But man, I thought everybody brought it here. I mentioned earlier I want to bring up one SFM50 thing a little bit later on, and that is, we've got this Slack channel with the voting panel that is the time of the year where it starts to heat up a little bit. And one of the first conversations we had when discussing the 2025 list was what to do with Will Ospreay, because he's missed all this time, and he's been the best wrestler in the world for the last 5 years or so. And I personally, I think he's going to be a top 10 guy for me, but I can't in good conscience vote him number one. And I just happen to make the offhand comment. I go, not only is Ospreay not going to be my number one, but I don't think Shun Skywalker is going to be my top three. I might have a completely fresh top three this year, because over the last few years, he's typically been, I think, the third best wrestler in the world. I don't know what I was thinking. That was such piss poor analysis by me. Shun Skywalker is still one of the three best wrestlers in the world. As I go through my match of the year tracking for this year, and he has 20 matches at 4 stars or higher, and as I watch him work his ass off in the four-way trios match the night before, and then I watch him in this match work at 120% for the entire match. I mean, for as good as Valletta was and for as good as Hamare was, and I thought the heel trio, I thought they held their own. I mean, Ishin, he does little things that drive me crazy in the best way possible. I just think he's such a brilliant wrestler. But this was a Shun match, and it was a reminder of how great this guy is, and the Naruki Doi match today certainly adds fuel to that fire. But I have to publicly take back a private comment. My apologies to Shun Skywalker. I don't know what I was thinking. Not only is he, at worst, a top five guy, realistically a top three guy in wrestling, this is, when I look at the totality of this year, one of the better years he's actually ever had. He's been brilliant this year.
You know what soaked in to me during the Corkin show that kind of works here about Shun? That Jay brought up about the class of 2016. Next year is his 10th year anniversary.
Yep.
And I struggle. I know we've talked about Dragon Gate, Mount Rushmore, and how that kind of situates in with it. And I had a moment where I was like, is Shun's 10 years in Dragon System, where does that rate up amongst others 10 year stretches? When you think about the fact that Shun really 2018 on was a actively good wrestler, if not great wrestler, and then 2020 on he was an excellent to best in the world caliber wrestler for 5 years after that. And I just kind of found myself just sitting in my seat after the Doi match going, is this 10-year stretch better than any contiguous 10-year stretch in Shima's career in Dragon Gate? Maybe. Shingo was the one that was like, I don't think I can go that, because Shingo ends up being in the Dragon System for almost 10 years. It's 12 years, so you don't really have to slide it one way for another. Like, you start in 2006 through 2016. That might be the 10-year stretch that we're talking about, stacking that up when we're looking at Shun Skywalker's 10th year anniversary coming up next year.
This has been my point for the last 2 or 3 years, is his career has happened overwhelmingly in the mass content era, in a point where anything older than a week is old news, and it's going to be really, really hard going forward to figure out what the legacy of this generation of wrestlers is, not only in Drangate, but across the world. It's going to be really, really hard to analyze these guys in a historical context, because we're constantly being inundated with new, and never going back in time. And I mean, he's almost as good as anybody, man. You leave space for Mochizuki, you leave space for, you know, maybe the in-ring catalog that Masato Yoshino has, and then you go on down to Shima and Shingo and Yamato, but it's as impressive of a 10-year run as I can remember. I've watched his entire career in real time, and I've spent every day since 2018 being dumbfounded by how good this guy is. I mean, not only just the raw, sheer body of work that he has, but all the character stuff that has landed that has had no right to land, all of the memorable angles he's been a part of, and not only all of the great matches, but all of the high-end match of the year caliber matches that he's had. You know, KZ in 2019, KZ in 2021, Kaito Ishida in 2021, the Twin Gate match at the Ultimo Anniversary Show, the Madoka Kakuta match in 2023, the Cage match in 2023. I don't know, man. The guy's unbelievable. And I think historically, I worry that it will not be kind to him, and that even if he is, say, the most popular face in the English-speaking Dragon Gate world right now, I just don't think enough people are appreciating the greatness that he is consistently pumping out.
Yeah, it feels like a level of like greatness that is different from the kind of greatness that Mochizuki and Shingo has in a
it
way.
Is, it is a different, because it's more all encompassing. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Look, Shingo's had some amazing character work. Mochizuki's had some amazing character work, but it's not what Shun's done. You know, I always think back to just like the custody of Jason Lee match and the work that Shun was doing when he was trying to recruit Jason Lee into Z-Bratz. This is, you know, a year before Jason joined. It's just, you know, stuff like that should not work as well as it does, and yet he always finds a way to make it work. It's why I had the crisis that I had after Dangerous Gate this past year, because it's the one time in 9 years that I felt like Shun was in a position to succeed and didn't do it to an overwhelming degree. I actually thought he sort of laid an egg in that match, and it was so jarring to me and so unfamiliar that I worried it was going to be a sign of things to come, and that couldn't have been less true. He immediately turned it around, and I just happened to really not like his individual performance in that Dangerous Gate match, but everything else he's ever done, it is an utterly remarkable career. And now, you know, we're approaching 10 years. That is a long time to be this good. Even if you want to start the clock at 2018, that's a long time to be this good. And he's still just absolutely amazing. And I thought his performance here was sort of the one that you can point to and go, that is why he's different. That is why he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. Because for as good as everybody else was here, this was a Shun Skywalker match.
You know who is one of the best wrestlers in the world, Case?
Who's that?
That is Jackie Kamei.
Let's do it as
the main event of night two for the Open the Twin Gate titles. Love and Peace, Jackie Kamei and Rita uncrowned D-Courage, Yuki Yoshioka, and Dragon Dia. D-Courage fails in their second defense. Love and Peace are the 70th champions. And how is it possible that Jackie Kamei is this level of a big match wrestler? He is the each time he's put into these situations, I feel like he pulls out something else. And I just came walking away from that match going, is this what it was like in 1994 to see Rey Mysterio? and like, is this like, are we getting to a point with how incredible this guy is as a high flyer that he does things that you see it happen? And like the big thing I felt like was the springboard Frankensteiner in this match, where you see him go up for it and you're like, no, he's not. You see him go for the springboard, you're like, Jackie's not going for a springboard Frankensteiner right now. That's not what's about to happen. And then he pulls it off as clean and as beautiful as any Frankensteiner you've ever seen in your life. Jackie Kamei is just, he has now really stepped into a point of his career where he's coming up on that 5-year anniversary next month. And I really, it's really remarkable, even as someone who has been a big Kamei supporter from the jump, like the things that he's pulling off and the performances that he had, like specifically in this match, is now just one of a long line of these matches that, I mean, he's had 2 or 3 matches at this level so far this year, if you want to talk about like Rey de Parejas and other stuff. And I at a certain point, you have to recognize greatness while you see it. And I think that there are some flyers that I think do a little bit more things with like added flourishes or able to like pull off like extra like rotations and stuff like this. But I don't think anyone in pro wrestling is as precise and has the level of body control, frankly, as a high flyer as Jackie Kamei is, that the only person I go back and think about is like 90s Rey Mysterio at that level, because that's kind of what we have been seeing from him over the last like 3 years, and particularly we got to see from him in the Swing Gate match.
I remember I made a Rey comp after there was that Kumamoto show that made tape in 2023. It was the Genki Homecoming show in 2023. And I remember my review of that show was, this feels like if Dragon Gate had an American television show, this is what it would feel like. And there was a Shun Kamei singles match where Kamei reminded me so much of Rey Mysterio that I was completely floored by it. The thing that I've been coming back to with Kamei this year, and I mentioned this in September after the Tanaka match, was he now has a catalog of big title matches. And my point all along has been, I think Dragon Gate is actually losing money and doing a disservice to themselves by not regularly having Kamei as your Brave Gate champion, your Twin Gate champion, or your Triangle Gate champion, because there's now a history of him in these matches, and the history is jarring. The track record is unbelievable. If you go through the 5 Brave Gate matches he's had in his career, it's Jack versus Kento 1, Jack versus Kento 2, both of which well over 4 stars, absolutely excellent matches. There's a Hyo match that is good, not great, a Daya match that is good, not great, and then the most recent Ryoya Tanaka match, which was completely stellar, an absolutely great match. If you go to his Twin Gate history, it's the Shun Monte match from the Ultimo anniversary show a few years ago, 5-star match, one of the best matches in company history. The Daya and Kakuta title win shortly after, incredible match, 4.25 stars there. There's one blemish on this Twin Gate resume, which is M3K versus Hyo and Kai versus Jason and Jack at Dangerous Gate 2023. That's a 3.25-star match, but you look at who they were in the ring with, not exactly the most loaded Twin Gate match of all time. From there, it's Jason and Jack against Alejandro and Kaito Kiyomiya, which on a personal level, one of my favorite Twin Gate matches in recent vintage. There's the 4-way Twin Gate match from Kobe World 2024, which was Kamei and Monte against Nod Hug against Jason and Shun against Flamita and Casey. And then earlier this year, Jack and Rita against Jason Lee and Coach Minoru, Gate of Bayside, 4 stars. Just an unbelievable resume of Twin Gate matches between Shun Monte and Dai Kakuta and Alejandro Kiyomiya, and then the 4-way match at World last year, and then even this year at Gate of Bayside. And the big thing with all those matches is, who's the best wrestler in those matches? It's Jackie Kamei. And then you look at his Triangle Gate history, and he's got more Triangle Gate matches than I realized. I won't go through all of these here, but he's a focal point. March 5th, 2022, Natural Vibes against Gold Class, the original Gold Class. This is Ishida, Minoru, and Doi, 4.75 stars. Incredible, incredible match. He's the focal point of that match. He's in a 4.5-star match. Ishin, Kai, and Shun versus Shimizu, Kamei, and KZ from December 3rd, 2022. He's in a 4-star match, May 20th, 2023. Shimizu, KZ, and Kamei against Benkei, Hulk, and Minoru. He's in a 4.25-star match, Kobe World 2023. Minoru, Minorita, and Doi versus Shimizu, Kamei, and KZ. He's in a 4.25-star match in August of last year, Shimizu, Strong Machine J, and UT versus Hyo, Jack, and Monte. And then you have the Kobe World match from this year, which we all talked about how once Love and Peace were knocked out of that match, the vibe completely changed, the match quality went down. That is 15 title matches over a 5-year career in which most of them, you and I, despite watching everything from this company and a lot of stuff from a lot of other companies, you and I can remember those matches to an extreme degree. We can call back specific spots from them. For as impressive as the 10-year run of Shun is, there is something about Kame title matches that are just next level. And now he has this Twin Gate match to add to it as well.
He is just a special kind of wrestler. And Rita, somehow in this, like, we can't forget the fact that this was a pretty much thrown together tag team back last December that after watching this match and then really seeing like all the love and peace stuff that we've kind of had over the last few days, I kind of like come away with the thought of like, yes, Jason and Jackie, those two worked so incredibly well together. Whatever combination you got, whenever he worked with Monte, either against him or as a partner, it was there too. But how is it that a guy who almost has the exact same physical profile of Jackie Kamei, possibly his best partner, because it just feels different and it felt different in this title match. And I feel like outside of the Ultimo 35 match, this Twin Gate match felt like, oh, he's discovering like a new side of him. And then you have Rita just doing tornadoes out of nowhere. And it just blows your mind at a certain point.
The whole thing was, it was absolutely incredible. You know, I think Kame was once again banging the drum forward in this match. I think he was the star of it. But to look at the work that Rita did, to look at the work that Daya did, and to look at the work that Yoshioka did, I mean, I feel like at some point, in some way, we have to get a huge Yoshioka versus Jack match, because I've always liked their chemistry together. They had a singles match in King of Gate 2 years ago that I really liked, and it was short. It was on a house show. It wasn't that big of a match, but I just remember how well those two worked together. It was a string of endless combinations. It was a 20-minute match that was never boring. I think this is wrestling at its highest level. You know, when there's a good Twin Gate match, there's nothing better than it. And this was a really, really good Twin Gate match.
Yep. And it felt like a really deserved title win. After the first few months, Love and Peace are on the way up, Case. It feels like it's good time to be a Love and Peace fan. The one thing, like, we didn't touch too much on D-Courage with this. It did kind of, in a way, like afterwards, I had a moment that I wanted to ask you about this. Did we kind of see the end of kind of this incarnation of Yoshioka and Daya with this match? Because it felt like as soon as the belt were dropped, we are starting the Yoshioka, I'm the ace, going towards King of Gate kind of thing. And you see how tenuous this unit kind of is. And with Ryoya Tanaka now fully flourishing on his own, is it time that we move D Courage into the unit breakup warning zone at this point? Because it kind of felt like that to me.
It is sort of the lingering thing with this unit. I mean, I think you could have said that at this time last year or this time 2 years ago, because we're going to hit the 4-year anniversary of D Courage in January, which is crazy to think about, with, you know, Yoshioka obviously being gone for a year, and at a point Kakuta being involved, and then Tanaka being involved now for as long as he has been. Yes, you're right in the sense that Tanaka's off doing his own thing. They're going full steam ahead with Yoshioka, and Daya is sort of the odd man out again. Do you throw Monte in this unit finally? I don't know. Do you break up this unit finally? I don't know. It does feel like there has been, since Kakuta left, a pretty strong through line in what D-Courage is and what they represent, and it does feel like that came to an end in this match.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see as after King of Gate is over with, like, what taking stock of the units, and to see, especially 4 years as a face unit, super long. I know that we're kind of in an era now of longer tenured units. I mean, look over at Natural Vibes at this point, but it does tonally, in a sort of way, kind of feel like that we have kind of at least this era of the team. It felt like it's kind of come to a close in Osaka.
Very much so. I would agree with that.
Anything else you want to touch on with Gate of Destiny before we move on to the King of Gate matches that happened today in Korakuen?
I think these shows are very easy to consume. Watch the last three matches on each show. Watch the comedy stuff if you're into it. But an enjoyable set of shows, all things considered.
Everyone should give Jiro Shinbashi a chance. Just give him a chance. I think it's actually kind of, like, sadly enough, No Fun Lanza might get a chuckle out of at least seeing him try to, you know, give business cards to people.
Yeah, very much so.
King of Gate 2025 kicked off today as of the time of recording, November 6th in Corcoran Hall, with the traditional opening night festivities and four King of Gate matches. We are just going to cover the King of Gate stuff on here, and we'll talk about the other stuff more, tying in with a Kobe Art Center's show this weekend and Glate next week. But we're off to the races here in King of Gate. Four matches: Luis Monte versus Ishin, Naruki Doi versus Shun Skywalker, Ryoya Tanaka versus Hamari, and Yuki Yoshioka versus Madoka Kakuta. Four kind of different style of matches, and nothing I felt like was like 2016 vintage, I guess I would say, but I felt coming out of those four matches that each of them had something at least interesting to it. And when you look at a tournament that's going to have like this many kind of singles matches with it, it was a strong enough start. And at the very least, we got to see what Lucha Ishin's able to do.
Yeah, no, that kicked ass. It's always sort of the secret weapon with him is you forget that he can actually do literally everything in a professional wrestling ring, and this was no different. You know, with King of Gate, you always get the matches, especially on these Corkin shows, you always get the matches that are way shorter than they have any right to be. And this was one of those where I would have liked to have seen with Ishin and Monte a bit more of a drawn out contest here. I thought this lost a little bit of steam when Ishin stopped just fully committing to the lucha bit. And I would have liked to have seen just a different version of this match, I think, but still a very fun outing for both these guys.
Yeah, Ishin wins with a Super Tigre reversal. This came after the only bit of Gacha Dokoro that popped up was a cookie sheet shot in this thing. But Ishin was working at serious mode and trying to show they can go move for move, but then it broke down to, I think it was Kato with the cookie shot, getting him kind of the win here. I was just at 3.25 on it. Just, it was fun, but yeah, I am intrigued by what you would get if you say, all right, this is now a round robin block play tournament and Luis Monte versus Ishin has a 20-minute time limit. What do those 20 minutes become? Like, I do wonder what that could have been.
Yeah, very much so.
Match two in the tournament, Naruki Doi versus Shun Skywalker. Shun Skywalker advances after a blazing closing stretch of blasters getting submit turn into a Bible, and then Doi's five into a deadlift blaster, but all of the reversals end with a Bakatari sliding kick into the Skyda special pen for Shun Skywalker, basically escaping Corkin with his tournament still alive, but dragging his leg after Naruki Doi. Basically put him in a corner for a minute and continuously gave him dragon screws. And that seems to be the thing for Skywalker in this tournament, is how is this knee going to hold up for him? But I love this match. I think that it ended up probably that or Ryoya Tanaka ended up being the match of the night for me.
I liked this as much as anything in Osaka. I mean, this was far and away my match.
Did you like
this
as much as the Twin Gate match, Case?
I liked this on the level of the Twin Gate match.
So did you go 4.5 on Twin Gate?
I went 4.5 on Twin Gate. I went 4.5 on this.
Okay, I was 4 flat on this. But
seeing Shun counter a Doi fives with a deadlift butterfly suplex got me. All right. I haven't seen that before. That was completely
mind. Yeah,
that was completely mind blowing to me. I love the intensity this was worked at. I love the pace this was worked at. I thought all of this was absolutely spectacular. I really, really thought this was a special King of Gate, old school G1 sprint style of match.
That's fair. Yeah, Doi was a piranha in this match, completely kind of destroy it. The Casanova bomb that Doi just hit out of nowhere, like, had me scream. That was as brutal of that kind of move that you Whenever Hio does the Samson driver, I wish it has like the level of impact that Doi's Casanova bomb had on this match.
Yeah, because Hio sometimes just looks like it's a roll up, but Doi just threw Shun Skywalker onto the top of his head.
It was just probably the nastiest thing all night, including Masaaki Mochizuki kicking the piss out of Jiro Shinbashi.
Like, all it was on the, that all level. Of those counters towards the finishing stretch, again, you know, the Doi fives counter into the blaster, and then that crazy move that you just talked about, the knee salt, the double knee moonsault missing, and the Bakatari sliding kick, and then the eventual Bakatari counter that led to the flash pin victory. I mean, that is such a high level of pro wrestling, and I thought they were in lockstep the entire time. I was just completely in love with this match.
Yeah, and it's a shame that this is it for Doi in the tournament, because he had like it was a little bit of the glimpse of, oh yeah, no, this is the Doi that we know is still there, but we just don't get to see it as much anymore. But it was nice to see him pull that back out for his King of Gate appearance, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we had this version of Doi all the time, but we're not going to have that in Dragon Gate. But I'm glad he showed up at least for this opening night of King of Gate.
Absolutely. We went to intermission, and then there was a non-tournament match, but we finished out the show with the Open the Brave Gate champion, Ryo Tanaka, against his would-be generational rival, Hamari, in a match that it felt like, okay, you are seeing a future Kobe World main event here. Like, when we would talk about the days of, oh yeah, no, SB Kento, that is the future King of Gate, or the future Kobe World main eventer. That was us reaching a little bit. That was us hoping. You see Ryo Tanaka and you see Hamari and the way they face off and the way that they went after it with those two in an immediate kind of paced match. And I think 2-3 years from now, when it's July 2028 or 2029 and we're previewing Kobe World for that year, we're going to have to go back to this match as kind of like, let's talk about the history of these two generational rivals. It did kind of feel like something is erupting out of this.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way watching this that I felt about watching Kento and Takuma Fujiwara in 2021. And I think the difference is that, you know, Tanaka's already been in the company longer than, well, I mean, obviously longer than Fujiwara was. Hamari's been in the company longer than Fujiwara was, and Kento was, what, 2.5 years? So
yeah, you're talking about that Memorial Gate weekend, right?
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, I mean, yeah, this is a future Kobe World main event. There's just no way that it's not. So I can't say enough good things about these two guys overall. I did not love this match. I thought this was just an okay match, but I like what this holds for the future, and I like that Tanaka is now nailing the Stardust Press every time he hits it.
Yeah, I just think that the two of them had a level of just that. I feel like we say chemistry a lot, but just the level of thought that Hamari just super kicking out the Crimson Smash, being like the one person doing the Samoa Joe walking away. I'm not letting you dive on me. I'm not letting you Crimson Smash me. And at that moment, I was completely entranced in this match. And Hamari at this point, I mean, He's no longer the super rookie, but I mean, he's the number one merch mover, according to Jay now. So that's something at this point. And with him and Tanaka, it does kind of feel like that this will be something that they go back to. I do like the fact that it was very clear that this was never going to be a match that was going to like spill into a Brave Gate title match. Like, Tanaka was like clearly like, shoving the title in his face afterwards, saying like, you can't ever get to this. And Hamari is now grown out of that weight, and really that dead or alive match will probably end up being his only Brave Gate match now in retrospect. But I really enjoyed it. I thought that this was just like the smart match to do on an opening night. Tanaka getting the win with the Stardust Press in a pretty convincing kind of fashion feels right for him, in the way that it felt like that he is at a point in his career where he should really be, even Hamari being Hamari, he should beat Hamari in these scenarios, right? And it felt like it was a incredibly earned kind of advancement for him.
I agree. And I'm surprised by the result. I you know, when we talked about the King of Gate lineup when it first dropped, I thought maybe Homari had a chance to win it, but I do like, given the way that the Tanaka reign has gone, I do like the emphatic victory from Tanaka. That's very interesting to me, but I do think after watching it play out, it is the correct move.
So just because we didn't really kind of catch up with this here, with it, Ishin, after winning, will face the winner of El Kakui and Rhea Fuda in the second round. Shun Skywalker, after winning, will face the winner of Masaki Mochizuki and Kota Minora in the second round. And Homari faces the winner of the match happening at Kobe Arts Center between Yamato and Hyo. And I know you didn't catch this part, Case. Hyo got a direct fall on Yamato, clean as a whistle, in the precursor match on Korakuen today.
I think it'll happen in Kobe, too. I think that is the most obvious result of the tournament, is Hyo going over Yamato there.
I am not, as like a huge Hyo lover, I don't feel like this is his tournament this year. And I know that there's a lot of thought about it. I feel like that with everything, it ever since Yoshioka had that match with Tanahashi, it was pretty clear that he's going to kind of run through it this year.
I don't think you're wrong. I think it's almost hard to ignore with how epic of a high fly flow he hit to end the Kakuta match. It's like, all right, well, that should be the guy. But I also think there's a chance that he now has that pinfall victory over Kakuta, and so he doesn't need to win this tournament. And you can start the year in Korakuen with Kakuta versus Hyo, and then you can get to Kakuta versus Yoshioka for the big show in February. And I think that would work out nicely. And I think Yoshioka would win the belt on that show.
Yeah, because I will say, in defense of Hyo at winning this tournament, it does feel like that is the thing he needs to do to get to that point, to get that Dreamgate match. Then after he has the King of Gate and he has that first Dreamgate match, then you can more comfortably see him in that picture going from now on, right?
And it might be a situation in which he's never in that spot again, but I do think he's earned being in that spot at least once.
No, I think that is fair to say. Let's talk about Kakuta and Yoshioka. That was the main event of Cork and Hall's. Case said Yoshioka advances with a high fly flow, the first pinfall that I think Kakuta has taken since the spring.
He took one in a battle royal against Ben K, but this is the first non-battle royal pinfall he's taken since he turned.
Yeah, so definitely it raises the thing, look at Fukuoka in February for him with this. I think I'm higher on this, but I'm also higher on most Yoshioka things with this. So I'll just go through what I ended up really kind of enjoying about this. I liked how really Kakuta was decided to be the asshole in the room and going for the eye. I think that it worked out very well, and more so than the Susumu match, this is where I really feel that Kakuta has grown and matured into being this heavyweight kind of monster that Yoshioka was just kind of pulling himself to the feet until he was able to really survive what he needed to, kick out of a sliding hip attack and hit the finish rush clean and get out of there barely by the skin of his teeth. I thought that was what you want out of Yuki Yoshioka matches, and he performed it exactly the way you'd want to. I maybe a little slow, but I thought that for what you're hoping for of Yoshioka and where he was before, this was the clearest glimpse of 2022 Yuki Yoshioka we've had since he dropped that belt to Shun Skywalker.
I really liked Yoshioka in this match. It was the Kakuta performance. I thought this was his weakest so far. When you go back, everything he's done since the turn, even that Skywalker match, I liked him in the Skywalker match more than I liked Skywalker. This was the first one in which he sort of lulled me to sleep in the beginning. And although by the end there were a few really mean hip attacks that I liked, I felt like this match was entirely reliant, or almost entirely reliant, on Yoshioka picking up the slack and doing the work that he was doing. So I was a little bit down on Kakuta here, but once again, arrow pointing up on Yoshioka. And if he wins the tournament, fantastic. But he has this win now, and I feel like Dragon Gate's going to get out of Yoshioka winning this tournament by keeping this win in the back pocket and cashing in on it at a later date.
Kakuta lariating through the first battle hook was incredible.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, just going like, no, you're in the air. I'm just going to hit you and not let you hit me. And my lariat is going to put you in the ground. I ended up going 4.25 on this case. I thought that I was sucked into Yoshioka through it and him having to go to Inferno Depths at certain points to it. I'm fully in on Yoshioka now at this point.
I will say, you know, for the other three tournament matches, I'm good on those. I don't need to rewatch those. But when I do my written review, I will give this match another watch because right now I'm at about 3.5 on it.
That's fair. That's fair. And those were the tournament matches we had in Cork and Hall. Let me get my tab right. We are now fully into King of Gates season. Jay said on commentary that the matches for the tournament will go up. It's not going to be an immediate thing, but they'll be up on the network by the end of the tournament, which I think is necessary for this kind of tournament. Like if this was a block play thing, it's one thing not to have someone who's going to go over ever make tape. But when it's a complete 32 person knockout tournament, I feel like for the coherency of the show of the tournament, you kind of need to have the ability to watch all of it. So I'm happy to hear that. And I'll go through the lineups that we have for the next few days. I will just hit on the King of Gates stuff on the things that aren't natively network shows. But the good thing is, Case, we have a network show coming up this weekend at Kobe Art Center. It is the monthly appearance in the home base, opening up with Dragon Daya versus Rita. Daya trying to get his revenge after dropping the Twin Gate belt. 10-man tag, Ultimo and Kung Fu Masters plus Palm Dragon versus Don Fuji, Luis Monte, and Daiki Sahara and Kimura. The Jiro Shinbashi faces all the veterans series continues with the singles match against Yazushi Kanda. The Royal Sambo this week is called the King of Gate 2025 Tournament First Round Preview Royal Sambo Battle Royal with Hulk, Susumu, Kagatora, Benkei, Kamei, Mochizuki Jr., KZ, UT, Masaki Mochizuki, Takashi, Ryo Fuda, El Kakui, Kota Minora, Jason Lee, Kai, and Yoshiki Kato. But we get back to tournament play with probably the match I'm most anticipating on this show, Dragon Kid versus Johnny Valletta. A non-tournament three-way tag, Yoshioka and Tanaka versus Shun Mare versus Kakuta and Ishin, and we close out in Kobe with two tournament matches, Strong Machine J versus LCLO and Yamato versus Hyo.
I think it's a very fun lineup, and I think that main event is a match that I am very, very excited about. With the idea, of course, being that I think Hyo is going to steal a victory from Yamato, but opening match, closing match on that show, the things I'm most excited about.
Yeah, Strong Machine J versus LCLO, I was much more excited about it when LCLO started wrestling in that double shot in Kobe Art Center. I was like really up for it, but as time has gone by, I've kind of going like, I think LCLO still going to win this match, but I just, my anticipation level for that match has dropped with the weeks gone by.
I'm still into it. I'm looking forward to seeing how that looks.
Elsewhere on tour for King of Gate and Hime and Matsuyama City, we have KZ versus Jason Lee and BB Hulk versus Kai. In Jackie Kamei's hometown of Tottori, we have a couple King of Gate matches, Ryo Fuda versus El Kakui. And I'm so happy we're getting this in the main event, Jackie Kamei versus Kagatora, first round matchup in King of Gate.
Very fun. I'm looking forward to seeing this make tape eventually.
Yeah, no, I'm here with you for that. Also, the Jiro Shinbashi Veterans Tour continues with Sumi Yokosuka in Tottori. So just checking off names off the list. Eventually, I feel like that they're going to have to, like, sometimes when Toru Washi like shows up on a random Dragon Gate show, as he does on the tours, like that's how you're going to really stretch out this first tour, is to go like, is Kondo going to be okay to come back and do a match here? No? Okay, then let's go see Owashi for somewhere that doesn't make tape.
Very much so.
But that's what we have with Dragon Gate coming up next week and over the weekend. We will be back with you all at our regular time next week talking about the Kobe Art Center, other hits from this today in Cork and Hall, as well as, well, I've seen it, Case, and I'm ready for you. Glate version Mega from Yokohama Buntai with Shima versus El Lindemann main eventing. I am really looking forward. I'm going to rewatch this show so I'll have it fresh in my mind for us on Tuesday.
I have not seen this show yet, so we'll talk Kobe and we'll talk Glate next week. I apologize for those that might have been looking forward to a week of review. You're going to have to wait just a few more days for me to watch awful wrestling. I did not have a chance to get to it this week.
Oh, well, I could tell you, like, just a bathroom break is all it's going to take for you to see what Tetsuya Zuchi did on that show.
Yeah, I'll be skipping that. I know what happened there, but I'll be watching, I don't know, maybe the last three matches on the show. I don't know. I'm going to watch Shima versus Lindemann for sure, and we'll see what other tolerance I have, but I'm not watching that.
No, I don't blame you with that. I told you, Case, the only two things really worth watching are that and Czech versus Hayato Tomura. So, yeah, but we'll talk about that next week. Anything else before we're out of here?
No, an all business episode clocking in just under 90 minutes. You'll love to see it. Really enjoyable shows this week. If you're somebody that's a little bit behind on Dragon Gate, watch the business stuff from Osaka, watch the tournament matches from King of Gate, and I think you'll feel caught up to this promotion.
Absolutely. It's tournament season, and we're going to be in through the thick of it throughout November, but we'll be back with you next week to talk about the Kobe show as well as what happened in Glade. But you can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. Case is on Twitter at _ in your case. I'm at Twitter at Fujiheya. You could also talk and join the conversation on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. That's where the Dragon Gate channel is, where a lot of people watch the show's lives and are chatting about it as it goes on, as well as the Open the Voice Gate channel. That's where whenever there is news about those days with match listings and all of that, we make sure it's all posted there. There's a pin post as well that has all of our historic shows, from the Dragon Gate USA series to the series we did leading up to Masato Yoshino's retirement and last year's Dragon Gate 25 series that we did. You can check that out there at the Voices of Wrestling Discord. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back with you next week talking Glate and King of Gate in Kobe. Take care, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungi AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungi every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.